way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face.
And we are live, though the little spinny thing went for about 30 seconds before it actually let me go live today. So we shall see if that's indicative of any issues. I also had some stuff on my other machine that I was preloading to be ready for this, and that took too long to load. So I don't know. I thought maybe it was my site because it was on my site on the other machine. But since that happened here on StreamYard site, hopefully we won't have internet interruption phenomenon today, like glitching out and max headrooming and just going dark or whatever it is that the people with the black helicopters do to prevent me from getting my message out. Now, if you're new here, you might take that seriously. If you've been around, you know that's a bit of a joke. What are we going to talk about today? A whole bunch of stuff. It's been a while since we have done a kind of stick your head up, look around, see what the clowns on the TV are saying. And even if it's not what they're saying, like what can we pick up from what's going on? Discussions on social media, things happening, news stories, economic news, stuff like that. I didn't even hear about the whole hantavirus thing until Tuesday last week when I had John and Nicole on. Today I'm going to tell you why I do not give a single F about the hantavirus, and I don't think you should either. And I think once I explain what I have to explain, unless you just don't believe me, you'll see why there's literally no reason to worry about this at all, including, but they're going to do blah, 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 and lock us down and make vaccine. No, they're not. That's not even going to happen here. Oh, they will hype it. They will scare you with it. They will make you pay attention to the pretty lady while David Copperfield makes a whole bridge disappear. But it's not COVID 2.0, except for the hype cycle part of it. I'm going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin today, but really from a standpoint of what I call sailor hatred. And that's not the guys that wear the uniforms that look like the Stave Puff Marshmallow guy and float around on boats. When I say sailor there, I'm talking about S-A-Y, not S-A-I, as in Michael Saylor. And there's about half of Bitcoin maxis that really hate this guy. Really hate him. It's not that they hate him. I don't care if you hate him. You can hate somebody if you want to. It's the reasoning. It's how, number one, stupid the reasoning is. And number two, how the very thing that they're now hating him for is actually doing something they said everybody needed to be doing anyway, in a way. Because that's just how people are. And I think it's just that some people hate certain people, and therefore they will twist anything that they say or do to further their hatred. You know, like an orange guy, you know, I'm just saying, you know, it's a thing, right? Then we have Elon's Doge. I've seen a statement made by quite a few different people. It's kind of a meme going around, but it's not like a I think it's just everybody's thinking it. Not like it's a consorted effort like true memes tend to be, where they get repeated by others. But I mean, like, people I really respect, like Tom Woods said this recently. I believe that Peter Quinones said it. And I believe several other people have said this. And that is that Doge was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And my response is, not really. I mean, yeah, but not the way you're saying it. In other words, we squandered this amazing opportunity. Elon Musk went and showed us the underbelly of government, and we just met. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We didn't take it. No. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many people to learn the truth about reality. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about why this ongoing thing about the White House ballroom. Now, I don't get much into politics, but I do get into examining human behavior. This is the dumbest fight the left has ever picked, other than trans-tardism, right? If you take the whole litany of trans-tardism out, then this would be the dumbest hill to die on that the left has ever taken. They're upset about a remodel of the White House that, I swear to God, I'm going to draw a comparison that at first you're going to go, really? And then you're going to go, oh, yeah, that's what happened there, too. Then we have $70 to $80 silver right now. It's kind of what the world we're sitting in. We blew way past 100 in a recent cycle. But silver kind of has a history. If we take out one aberration, which is around the 1982 attempt by the Hunt brothers to corner the silver market, of doing almost nothing, making a big run up, coming down into a new range and then doing almost nothing, and sometimes for decades. Decades. It went up, it went down, it went up, it went down, but it's in this little narrow band range of reality that that happens a lot of times. I'll show you that on a graph today, too, some historical silver prices. But my question is $70 to $80 silver the new $10 to $20 silver? Or are we looking more like $30 to $40 silver or $50 to $60 silver being the new $10 to $20 silver? If that doesn't make any sense, it will when we talk about this. Then we're going to talk about real quick today why you're not going to stop AI. And this is not about defending AI. You guys know I use AI. I'm running an AI course right now that we're helping people learn how to build their business with. I'm just talking about it more from the Luddite mindset. AI, data centers, so much water, so much electricity. Shut up. I'm going to tell you why you're just being stupid and why, even if you're right, it doesn't matter. You posting all your boomer bullshit on Facebook, right? Whether you're a boomer or not, acting like a boomer, et cetera, you're not going to stop this. You're not going to stop one data center from being built. And every town or city that gets in the way of that, it's just going to get built somewhere else, and the money and jobs that come from it are going to be there instead. And this idea that these giant data centers run with no people inside of it, there's like two people in there. You are so ridiculously retarded. I don't even have time to explain how retarded you are if that's you. That's not how this works at all. That's not how anything like this works. Yeah, there's not somebody standing next to every rack throwing a switch every 5 minutes or something like it's an auto factory from the 20s. But there's plenty of jobs that go with data centers. And then I'm going to ask you a simple question. If everybody wants to swap out their politicians, why don't they? Nobody's happy right now. Every place in the country where there would be any potential for a tight race, even some places where there really doesn't seem like there's potential for a tight race, like Colorado or California, we actually have some races that look a lot tighter than you would expect. And, you know, one or two of them may actually fall over to the other side. But why is that? Why is California even considering possibly electing a Republican for mayor of Los Angeles of all places? It's not probable, but it is possible. Well, Colorado might elect a Republican governor again. They've been a Democrat state, a blue state, for 20 years. Why is that happening? And does that actually mean the Republicans are doing a better job? Or is the same thing happening in other places where the switch could go the other direction? Why is that? Did we ever learn anything about, you know, something like rules for radicals as to why that would happen, especially in a republic where you have multiple governing districts and you can have like this same weird effect happening in opposite directions at the same time in totally different places? Even places where, hey, the incumbent party, not incumbent person, but incumbent party is going to survive, but the gap is drastically narrowed. How does that happen? Why does that happen? And then what comes next? What world, what brilliant new, brave new world are we charging into? 50-year mortgages, 10-year car payment plans, what else? The 50-year mortgage thing is something that's been kicked around a bit, and I think people don't really think it's going to happen. What if I told you that that's exactly what people said in the 1930s about 30-year mortgages? And that it took almost 20 years for 30-year mortgages to even be a thing that was kind of pushed by the United States government in general. And it wasn't until about the late 50s to 60s that people regularly started using them, and then they became the de facto standard. I'll show you how that's all true today. This is going to be it's going to be a wild and divergent ride with many topics today. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone, where you can rise above and break your limits. And big tech wants to keep you in a box. But you can join me and many others who have adopted Above Phone into our lives and take back your power with technology that unlocks new freedoms and protects your data. Privacy first, easy to use, and better than big tech. That's what you can get at Above Phone. And remember, Above Phone doesn't just do phones. Above Phone does phones, laptops, and tablets. And they have real support along with a free 45-minute conference call with a support engineer when you get your new device to help you onboard it. They have live email and chat support, articles, and video courses as well. The above book in general is really easy to use because it literally has videos of how to do everything preloaded on the above book when it shows up. These are great. They're not that different than the devices you're already using from a standpoint of you adapting yourself to using them. However, they are very different on the back end of what they allow others to see about your daily use and your daily movement. Check them out today at abovephone.com. Next up today, the caseplace.com. This is a big win, I think, for the community. I had this guy reach out to me about becoming a sponsor or a discount vendor. I actually had a sponsor spot open for a change. I hadn't even really tried to fill it, honestly. Just had other things that were more important to me than filling another sponsor spot. And when I saw what he was doing, I'm like, okay, this is exactly what I want from a sponsor. I want a sponsor that not only do I make a little bit of money from the relationship, and not only do I drive business to that sponsor. So it's I don't want to take somebody's money unless it's worth it to them. But to do something that my community would be like, hell to the yeah. The Case Place provides top quality military grade storage cases from brands like Pelican, Hardig, SBK, and others at up to 80% off retail. Pretty much everything's at least half off retail. These items, some of them are brand new, never sold, never used, never anything, purchased from Overstock and things like that. Some are returned items, damaged items that have been repaired, items that were bought out of surplus, etc. But they are all top quality, like new from a functionality standpoint. You know, there might be a scrape or something here and there. 50 to 80% off Pelican cases, Hardig cases, etc. This is exactly the kind of thing this community is looking for and the exact kind of deal that they should expect from a great sponsor and supporter of the show. And I did say discount provider, not just a sponsor. So if you're an MSB member, this already great pricing, take another 10 points off that. What kind of deal is that? That's the kind of deal that Jack gets you. That's what kind of deal that is. All right, so let's kind of dig into some of these topics that we have for today. So where I want to start out with is the hantavirus thing, okay? This is the dumbest thing for a person to be afraid of on the planet. I'm going to start out why the disease is dumb to be afraid of, and then making it out like they are going to turn it into COVID 2.0. That's even dumber. If you understand anything about this illness, how long it's been around, how it works, how this cruise ship thing happened, etc., I'm telling you, this is a dumb thing to even put on your circle of concern, right? Like, it doesn't even belong there. Ignore it. But some people died, and they died. Okay, yeah, hantavirus, especially the New World variety, and specifically the Argentinian variety, which is what this is extremely deadly once contracted. Up to a 60% mortality rate. Oh my God, Jack, see why we should all be afraid? No. You know what else is 100% fatality rate? Being hit by a semi doing 80 miles an hour when you're in a small car. That happens a few times a day, and you don't stop driving your car. Okay? This is an incredibly rare illness in humans. It comes from like rat and mouse piss and shit is where it actually comes from. I'm sorry. That's where it comes from. It is almost unheard of it for it to go from one person to another, except for this variety. That's not new. This is not a mutated strain. This is not a novel strain. This particular strain has the ability, with extremely close personal contact, to go from one human to another, especially like the exchange of body fluids or things like that. It is not a thing that easily propagates person to person to person. It's not like measles, the flu, the cold, polio, any infectious disease that you typically think of as transmitting from human to human. Doesn't do that. It just doesn't do that. And again, this isn't a, like they went with COVID. It does, it doesn't, it does, it doesn't, it doesn't, it doesn't, it doesn't, it does, it does, it doesn't, it doesn't, it does, right? Like all over the map because they either didn't know or pretended not to know, right? Because it was new. It was novel. It was a neovirus, right? This is old. This has been around a long time. This has been around a lot longer than we've been able to identify it and give it a name. This is an ancient virus. Been with us forever. It hasn't caused any problems in the past. It won't cause problems now just because a few people on a fucking boat got sick. And a few of those people died. In fact, probably more died than didn't die because Once it progresses into the lungs, which it almost always does, the death rate is extremely high from this. This is, and that's the difference, right? The hantaviruses of the old world tend to attack the kidneys. They cause bleeding into the urine and things like that. It's actually pretty easy to treat, especially today with modern medicine. So the death rate in that is somewhere between 1 and 15%. But that's historically largely based on not really knowing how to treat it. But like today, it's more like a 1% to 2% if you get modern medical care. So that's a pretty low risk to begin with. But the stuff that comes from this side of the pond attacks the lungs, and this is much more difficult to deal with, and it does kill a lot more people. It is not COVID 2.0. They're not even trying to do that. Okay? They, whoever the fuck they are in your tiny brain, are not trying to do that. The news is trying to make you pay attention. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Are there some lunatics out there? We need a mask up for my protection. Yes. This is not a consorted global effort to change the world and lock you down and shut down. It's not. And it's not going to be because everything I already told you. It doesn't do the thing that's necessary for them to do their thing. I'm not saying they wouldn't do it again. They did it over what was basically a ramped up cold, and they locked down society at one level or another, depending on where you were, from anywhere from a few weeks to a few years. So they'll totally do it. This just isn't the tool that they can use to do it with. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be scared. And some of you, Jack, I know what you said about cruise ships, and I was changing my mind, but maybe they really are a Petri dish. Oh, for the love of F. My God. Don't go to a hotel then. Don't get on a bus. Don't get on a train. I mean, a cruise ship is a skyscraper turned on its side that floats. That's how big they are. Now, the ship that this happened on, this is not like your celebrity, you know, edge class ship, right? Or like an MSC Seascape or something. This is a relatively small ship for a cruise ship that does long extended cruises into the Arctic. So you have smaller ship, people packed in tight, less air exchange because you're in cold waters. Like, this is a perfect setup if you get somebody that is infected and symptomatic with this illness on that ship, which is what happened. So this would be like, well, you lock a bunch of people in a room. And then you say, well, because somebody in that room got sick, I'm not going to go into rooms with closed doors anymore. It's dumb. Just let it go. Move on with your life. They said it's the Andes virus, the Andes version, not the Argentinian. Yeah, he's right. It is. It's the Andes. It doesn't matter. Everything I said is still the way it is. All right, so let's move on and talk about sailor hatred. And it's a failed IQ test for Bitcoin Maxi. So I would say the biggest divide among Bitcoin maximalists, a Bitcoin maximalist, if you've never heard the term before, just means that a person is all in on Bitcoin but no other crypto. It's Bitcoin and shitcoin. I would call myself a maximalist. A maximalist actually means that you are for the fastest implementation of a thing possible. That's like what maximalist means outside, like just as a term by itself. I would also classify myself as a maximalist or a Bitcoin maxi. With that regard. Now, the big divide has been for at least 5 years. I mean, really huge divide for 5 years. Do you use Bitcoin as a unit of account to the point where you earn it, you save it, you spend it? Or do you earn and spend fiat and put your capital reserves into Bitcoin and hodl never soddle, or hold never sell? And a lot of folks, including people like me and Mike Saylor, have pretty much said, don't sell your Bitcoin, or even never sell your Bitcoin. The problem with never sell your Bitcoin means it would ignore reality. There's always a time you would sell anything sooner or later. And so when you hear people like myself or Michael Saylor or many other people in the same space saying, don't sell your Bitcoin, we're not really saying never. We're saying don't sell your Bitcoin because it went up. Don't sell your Bitcoin because it went down. Don't chase a moving target, hold on to it as long as possible to get the greatest reward from holding it. I think this is obvious to anybody that wants to understand it. Well, Saylor, of course, was famous because he started stacking Bitcoin right at the beginning of the pandemic. It was a brilliant maneuver. into his company strategy. And he started stacking massive amounts of it in there, and he has continued to do so. Well, he also became a fan of AI. He went out and used AI and came up with investment vehicles. So he said that he was able to use the deep thinking component of AI to come up with the framework for these different investment vehicles like Stride and Strike and other ones that he has, and get them like 90% there, and then get, you know, his team of people to take it the rest of the way, make it legal, make it compliant, make sure the numbers worked, have a quant go over it, et cetera, like that, and bring these products to market. One of these products, I believe it's Stride, it's either Stride or Strike, pays out like an average 10, 11% dividend. And what they do with that particular investment vehicle is if the price drops below the par value, which is $100 per share, they actually increase the dividend. And if it rises too much above it, they actually cut the dividend. And they try to pull the dividend to be right around 10%, but it can go down to 9, it can go up to like 11 or 12, and there's checks on this. Well, what they did recently is they did the math, they looked at everything and said, hey, we can sell a little bit of this Bitcoin, pay this quarter's dividends out of it, okay? And when we do that, we'll then take a tax loss on it, and that will reduce our profit and our income tax from the entity, which then gets returned to the shareholders. That's how tax cuts work for corporations. The money goes to the shareholders. That's you if you hold stock in the company that pays a dividend anyway, okay? So that's how that works. And then we're just going to buy back more than we sold. So we're actually going to still end up, let's say, at the end of the quarter with more than we started with. Plus, we made our dividend payment without any kind of pulling on cash reserves. Plus, we cut our tax burden. Do you know what you call that? Fucking smart. That's what anybody that was in that situation that would do anything but that, because I said never sell, so we can't ever sell one freaking tenth of a Satoshi, is retarded, and you should not invest with somebody like that. Now, am I saying go put all your money into these investments? No, I'm not. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't own any strategy stock. I don't own any Strike or Stride or anything else. I have money that's in stocks and funds and things like that are managed by my investment manager. And then I have independent money that I manage, mostly in Bitcoin and other things, that is over here. And I don't own any of those vehicles yet. There could come a time when I want to do that. Now, the idea that you might sell Bitcoin, or honestly any cryptocurrency that you have at a loss, to capture the loss and then buy the currency back because you don't have to deal with the wash rule, I was teaching you that 10 years ago. So how am I going to go out and badmouth this guy for doing the exact thing that I taught before he knew what Bitcoin was? Well, I'm not going to do it because I'm not retarded like these maxis are. Now, but here's what makes them really retarded. They're bitching that he sold a little bit of Bitcoin. And by the way, this is like 0.001% of like a hundredth of a percent of holdings. You realize how small that is, right? But these are the same people that have been saying, you got to spend it. If you don't spend it, you know, if you don't spend it, it doesn't have any, if it just sits in one place and never moves, it doesn't serve any utility. But you have to spend it. They've been worried about you spending it forever. Selling it and spending it are effectively the same fucking thing. There is no difference. Not for your balance sheet. If I want to buy this microphone here, right, and this microphone costs $120, and I sell $120 worth of Bitcoin to buy it with cash, or I buy it with $120, yeah, on one end of the trade, assuming you actually keep the Bitcoin and you sold it to me, there's a difference there because there was no involvement of U.S. dollars. But odds are in these transactions today, one side of the transaction is probably converting anyway. So when you buy when I buy this microphone with Bitcoin, I'm still selling my Bitcoin. I'm selling it for a product instead of selling it for a fiat currency. So what's the difference? And the difference is there isn't any. There isn't any difference at all between selling Bitcoin and buying something with it. It's the same net effect to your balance sheet, your personal balance sheet. These people just hate the guy. And they hate the guy because I believe that we have two types of people in Bitcoin right now that are heavily involved. People like are involved at my level. They're all autists. We're all like somewhere on that spectrum, right? Now they just call us all autistic. We were what you would call, you know, high functioning autistics. You would call those people with Asperger's syndrome you know, just 10 years ago before they changed the name for everybody, which I think is a tragedy. And I'll tell you why I think they did it, by the way, because it's something to do with stabs that go in the arm and causing autism. And then now you could say, but now we just can diagnose it because you broadened the definition. So you can bury it in statistics, lying with statistics is one of Bill Gates's favorite books. I'm just saying there's kind of a whole Venn diagram shit going on there if you want to put it together. So I think that's why they've done all this. But in the end, you're going to have to realize something that is fundamentally true. And that is when some people hate things, they'll attack anything around them. But on the autistic thing, I had a little autistic moment there where I forgot what it was. Anyway, what I'm saying is the people I'm talking about when I say autism, I'm not talking about people that can't function. I'm talking about people like myself that are a little weird, okay? And one group of autists are the people that are highly logical from a mathematical standpoint. They're good with numbers. They immediately intuit numbers. They're people like me that we go to Costco on a big giant hit day where we're buying tons of shit and my wife's throwing shit into the thing that I didn't even barely see. And she goes, how much is it? And I go, $650. And then they ring it up and it's $643. That's one type. And then there's the autism that's more of like an ADD form, where there's the thing and I want the thing my way. And if I don't get the thing my way, then the thing's wrong. And I hate everybody that doesn't want the thing my way. And those are the maximalists that hate Saylor. They believe that Bitcoin is freedom money and Bitcoin is for everybody, but Bitcoin is only for people that think like me that are everybody that thinks like me. And they want it their way, and they want it 100% their way, and anything that goes outside of those lines they hate. But that gets muted because they can only spread hate so many places. But when somebody sticks out, right, the nail that sticks up above, the one that's popped, that's the one you see and you hammer it down, right? When that happens, they get really, really mad. And they've been very mad at this man because he's been very successful. Honestly, he may be the most successful person in the Bitcoin space, fully relatively thinking. And what I mean by that is, are there people that you could say, as in, because, you know, he doesn't own all this Bitcoin, his company does, its shareholders, etc. So are there people that maybe individually hold more Bitcoin than Michael Saylor? Sure. But Michael Saylor didn't come on to this in 2008, 2009, 2010, set up a laptop and mine a half a million Bitcoin, like, or just be early in and, you know, we're buying Bitcoin, you know, when you first could. This is a guy that was a normal everyday business person, a billionaire of his own making. And of course, they're like, he's a dot-com con man. No, he's actually one of the only CEOs that launched his company in the middle of the dot-com bubble, survived it, and then made his company profitable after it and stayed in business for another 15 years. So shut up, all right? But anyway, I've talked about this one enough. I'm going to let it go. It's up to you. It's up to you guys what you want to decide with this. I just think the whole thing's a failed IQ test. And I think that there's just some component of it that because he successfully started as an investor so late in the game and moved so fast, so perfectly, there's a lot of resentment there. There's a lot of resentment there. And when you add that to autistic rage, you get what you're looking at right now. Anyway, let's move on to something totally different. Elon's Doge, once in a lifetime opportunity. Like I said, Tom Woods said that recently, and I want to be clear. I respect the ever loving hell out of Tom Woods. He's one of the people that I most respect in this space that I consider myself part of, more so than many, many others in it. I think he's one of the most rational people that I've ever met. I think that he really always tries to be sincere and honest. He's one of the people that I actually shared a stage with that I'm most proud of that fact. So Tom and I were both keynote speakers at Liberty Forum back in, I think, 2012. And he was one night and I was the next night. And that to me was an honor. So I'm not putting him down when I say this. I think the only other person that I feel that emphatic about being proud to have shared a stage with would be like Jeff Lawton and Joel Salatin. Like that's how big a deal it was. So again, I'm not putting Tom down here. But what Tom recently posted was that Doge was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for us to basically rein in government spending. And my response is, no, it wasn't. It was never going to happen. It wasn't. An opportunity has to be a thing that has a chance, a snowball's chance in hell of happening. With, you know, being able to look back now, I understand why you would have felt that way in, like, February, right, after the election, you know, when it was just getting started and what have you. So, you know, a year and several months ago, I understand that optimism. I shared the optimism at the time. But when you know what Doge was like watching? An episode of Hoarders, right? An episode of Hoarders. If you've never seen the show Hoarders, it's kind of a fascinating look at mental illness. And they'll go to this person's house that's like stacked with like stinks, freaking rats are crawling through it, and there's just garbage and junk and stuff. And some of it's legitimate stuff, some of it's iffy, and some of it's completely ridiculous, right? And they have it stacked to the ceilings. The backyard is full, right? And but they have to hold on to it all. And if you don't know where this is going, it'll be real obvious in a minute, okay? And so then this expert goes in, who's just like somebody that's not retarded, and says, you know, let's say the guy's name is Danny. Danny, look, man, we need to – and Danny's like, yeah, I know. I need to get rid of – and he's really nervous, though, you know, like, I need to get rid of some of the stuff I know, but it's so hard to figure. Well, Danny, look, can we just start with – there's a big pile of magazines over there, and I looked at them. And the most recent date on the magazines in that particular pile, I know you have a lot of other magazines, but the last date on there is like 2002. And you probably don't need those magazines. Can we get rid of that pile of magazines? And Danny's like, no, there's some in there that I really need to hang on to because reasons, right? And then they'll say, well, okay, look, this one is torn and it looks like you spilled milk on it. It smells sour. The pages are stuck together. It's about this weird subject that do you even have? Well, I'm not really interested in that now. So can we get rid of this one that I can't get rid of that, right? Like, and no matter what you find, like, okay, I found a bowl in the bottom of your closet that has some sort of like porridge science experiment growing in it, and the spoon is glued to the bottom, and it stinks really bad, and it's covered in maggots. Danny, can we throw this bowl away? Well, that would be hard to get rid of. That's my bowl. You know, maybe we could get rid of the gunk inside the bowl, but we have to keep the bowl and the spoon. So we can get rid of the gunk. Yeah, we can get rid of the gunk. And the guy goes to the sink to get rid of the gunk. Wait a minute, what's in the gunk? Right? If you've seen this show, you know I am not exaggerating. Like, we found this old sandwich in the back of the refrigerator. It has green ham on it, and I don't think it's from the nursery rhyme, Danny. Can we get – well, that's my sandwich. I can't – like, I wouldn't have it if we got – like that, okay? That's your government when we did Doge. Okay, look, guys, we found out that we're sending a whole lot of money to fund these organizations that chant death to America in the Middle East. Can we stop funding that? Well, no, we can't do that. China would come in and take our influence. All right, hear me out. Okay, look. We found this millions of dollars. We're sending this to Ireland to do operas that promote transgenderism. Can we cut the money that we're spending in Ireland for transgendered operas? No, we can't. Not that. I mean, what would transgendered people in Ireland do if we stop? And you just keep going down the list. Think about some of the absolute asinine bullshit. Like, is every year, Rand Paul does his Festivus, which is a ripoff from the Seinfeld series, right? Where it's all the things you object to, all the things that you find objectionable, all the things you have a grievance with, right? And he does it with the government. And he brings out all these places your government spends money that are stupid, like, you know, will cocaine make gerbils breed faster or something? Like, legitimately, things like that. And as bad as that was, what Doge uncovered was 1,000 times worse. And none of it really stuck as to cutting anything. In fact, we're now spending more money than we ever were. So how was it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity exactly? Again, I'm not picking on Tom Woods, who said that. I'm just saying I see it differently. And I do see it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take all your friends who think, and I don't care what side of the aisle they're on, if we vote harder, man, we can make real change. No, you can't. No, you can't. If you expose the level of fraud, ineptitude, and waste that was exposed by DOGE, and it's only a fraction of what was really going on, and those things can't actually be cut from spending, then there is no hope to cut anything from spending until the system itself breaks. That's the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, guys. I'm sorry. It is never, ever, ever going to happen that our government will willingly cut any significant amount of spending over any significant amount of time, no matter how fraudulent and wasteful the spending is. We're literally paying criminals to commit criminal activity, and it's okay. And they'll give you, you know, a token hangman's noose around some Somalis in Minnesota and maybe some stuff in California here and there, and they'll pump it up, and they'll have some fall guys and fall girls. But in the end, they're still going to give the money. They're still going to put the money out there. They might change the name of the program. It's going to go to the same exact type of stupid shit, to the same exact type of thieving people. That's your reality. So you better see to your own shit because you're not fixing it. That was your once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to learn that. Speaking of stupid shit, how about the White House ballroom fight? This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I have yet to meet a single person that would say, I could in any way see myself under any circumstances at all ever voting for Donald Trump or anything he wants, that also would say, I think this ballroom is a horrible thing. When you have that kind of a like tribal divide, you know you're looking at nonsense. So I think some people aren't even really aware of what it is. They just know Trump's attached to it, and that makes them either support it or oppose it. So this is what this is. This is about putting a facility in the freaking White House that can accommodate large groups for large functions, which pretty much every other country's head of state has in their executive, like, dwelling. Like, if you go to Russia, Russia has things like this at the Kremlin. Yeah? Right? I mean, this is a common thing that, you know, when you are the leader of a country, other people might come to that country and you might put on a big event. And there is no good facility for that, especially anything with a headcount over 100 at our White House. Right? This isn't pro-Trump. It isn't anti-Trump. This is a statement of fact. This would be factual if this was going on when Barack Obama was president. But you guys, you MAGAs, you had a heart attack when Barack Obama put a basketball court in. Well, a basketball court is for Barack Obama, and I really, to tell you the truth, didn't give a fuck. It was the same thing that's going on now with anybody was just, we hate Obama no matter what, so he did the thing, so we'll attack the thing. But nobody took it to fucking court, as far as I know. Like, they're going to court to get injunctions from narrow-necked, liberal, pablum-puking judges who are willing to side on anything against Trump to keep putting injunctions to slow the construction of this thing down. Well, taxpayer money shouldn't fund it. That's great. I agree. But I would actually tell you that if you use taxpayer money to fund renovations and additions to the White House, if I made a list, like, with 10 being the most egregious, like funding a transgendered opera, and like one being like paying the salary of soldiers, right? So it's the least egregious thing. Then remodeling the White House, I would put as like a 2.5. Like, so many things are more egregious than that on spending taxpayer money, but it's not even being paid for with taxpayer money. It's not even being paid for with taxpayer money. Trump was able to reach out into his personal network and get it privately funded, probably so they can have their name on a fucking plaque, which that's a great way to build government facilities. We should always do that. We should always say, like, hey, if you help support this, billionaires, millionaires, multimillionaires, et cetera, if you do this, then you're going to be able to get this thing that says you're part of this and have some sort of co-branding in it. As much as you can raise from that, the better. And the purpose of it, again, is to, like, host events and host dignitaries and things like that, which makes total sense that the most powerful country in the world would have a decent place to do that. of all the shit that I can talk about Donald Trump, this isn't, I can't say anything negative here. Nothing. There is no reason to be opposed to this except, well, Donald Trump's tied to it. These are the kind of people I really believe that if Trump came out forcefully and insisted that it was necessary to breathe oxygen every day, would wrap a bag around their fucking face. That's who these people are. But God, they're able to get so many other people to pile onto that that have no idea. It's just pure tribalism. And it's indicative of a bigger problem. I don't think you could have done this in 1985. And there was plenty of hatred for Ronald Reagan. Plenty. I don't think you could have, like, if Ronald Reagan did this and Ronald Reagan said, hey, I reached out to all my actor buddies from Hollywood and it's all being paid for, Mr. and Mrs. America. You don't have to do it. There would have been some people think Reagan was really popular. And yeah, he was, you know, believe it or not. So is Trump. Just you don't like the people that he's popular with. That's the only thing. And most of you that are all upset are too young to remember Reagan and the same thing happening, or you have selective filtered memory. And you don't realize how much hatred there was by the left for Reagan. It was just a ton of hatred for Reagan from the left. But it's the same shit over and over again. It's just far more polarized. And I think we're in a position now where we are less unified than we've ever been as a nation. And we have worse things coming than we've ever been through. And so build up your networks, build up your associations, build up your net worth, build up your resiliency, and keep building it because you're going to need it. And the younger you are, the more, not less, that's true. The more, not less, that's true. All right, let's talk about silver prices for a minute. I kept my mouth shut during the huge run-up. And I did that because I wasn't really sure exactly where this was going to end. About the only thing I said is it like started heading into the $100 range. Like, don't right now. Don't do this. Like, this is not sustainable. Too far, too fast. And that's pretty much all I said about it. But I wanted to watch it kind of flesh itself out. And I think we can look and we can detect a new pattern here in silver. And for those that are on the audio only for this episode, I have a graph in front of me. Right now it's at 50 years. I'm going to change it to a 10-year graph right now. And I'm going to talk about it. And I'll try to explain it the best I can. But if you want to see the graph itself, we're about 42 minutes into the episode right now. So you can go by the Survival Podcast, pull up episode 3843, and the video will be embedded, and you can leap ahead till about 40 minutes in it to see what we're going to be talking about. So I'm going to tell you that silver has this very long history of running almost sideways, even when it looks like it's got volatility in it. Let's go to 20 years here, and you'll see what I mean. So if I come here, in fact, let's go to 30 years. Yeah, all right. Because even with this big peak, this is the 2011 peak. This is when I said, get out, get out, get out of silver, or definitely don't buy into it. This is when the people at gas stations were putting up handwritten signs saying, we buy silver. That was a Joe Kennedy shoeshine boy moment. Get away. So you take this as an aberration, and you look right here, and you go from about the point that we hit like the mid-teens in about February of 2007. You can even go back like to be over $10 permanently. With one little dip after that correction, you're back into the range of about February, March of 2026. That 10 became kind of the new normal of this very horizontal band here. This, again, this looks like a lot of volatility, but take out this big peak, and basically you're sitting between 10 and 20 bucks all the way up until 2020, right? That's 14 years. 14 years. Let me show you something here. You want to see what I mean by this is consistent? Okay, this is 1982 back here. Silver peaked at 35 bucks. This was an aberration, and it took years to finally correct back down to a mean. But we hit that mean, and it was, you know, silver under 5 bucks about 1990. Silver stayed under 5 bucks from 1990 until March of 2006. 1990 to 2006, 16 years, it stayed in basically this band between $4 and $10. Okay? Then let's move into a shorter duration here, 10 years. Let's go 30 years. Okay. So then eventually we broke out of the $10 number. Okay. Once we broke out of that $10 number, we did have that one little drop right there to 928. But basically, we stayed in this band between $10 and $20 from about 2006 till roughly where we stayed sustained above it, 2022. You're starting to see a pattern here yet. Silver does these giant breakouts. Those breakouts slowly correct over time. And then it finds a new band to operate in long term as a commodity metal that's used as a financial reserve. That's how it functions. Big surges up, followed by long terms of relative stability, followed by another big surge up. So let's kind of look at where that might lead us next. My gut, and there's a lot of people now saying that, like, this is the new normal for silver, because silver went up over $100. It went up to, like, I don't know, $113, $114. And then it crashed all the way down to $74. Now, if you tell somebody that was holding a commodity that was $20 a few years ago that it crashed to $75, they look at you like you're a moron and they think, well, that's fine for you. Go ahead. And you're the one that went all in at the top. This is not a crash for me. I'm good. Well, a lot of people are saying this, like, 60, somewhere between 60 and 80. So it'll either be 60, 70, or 780 is the 70 to 80 is the new band. I don't think so. And I'm going to bring that chart back up one more time just to show you why I don't think so. I want you to look at how long we come off a peak before we find the new band. So we came off a peak in April of 2011. That created the band around the $20 price point. And that took till 2013, right? So it took a couple years. And really for it to get into where it stayed down here, sub $20, that took until about 2014 from 2011. So you're looking at 3 years. So you're looking at a very high probability, because if I go back all the way back to 50 years ago, 1982's peak from the Hunt Brothers, the band was not found until about 1990. Right, so that one took a long time. That one took until 1982 to 1990, 8 years. So anywhere between 3 and 8 years. Here's another example of that right here. So now we're looking for another place where we'll find a new band. With that in mind, I'm going to tell you, I think the new band, I sound like I'm talking about a music group, right? I think the new band, a new horizontal band for silver is going to be somewhere between $30 and $60. So 30 to 40, 40 to 50, 50 to 60. Now that's a big range, but there's a lot of other shit that we just don't know yet that will have a lot to say about that. But if I had to put money on it, I'd say the new band is going to be $30 to $40. That's going to be kind of your new $6 silver that you had all through the 1990s, where you could have bought as much as you wanted. It is that cheap. That's my gut, but I'm going to watch other moving variables. The reason I'm willing to speculate right now is everything I just said, no matter how it works out, is not saying go put a shit ton of money into silver at $80, right? If you take that from this discussion, you've really missed it. I'm actually saying if you want to acquire silver, assuming you have some already, then this is probably not a good time to accumulate. This is a time to watch, wait, and see, and reserve some capital. Because here's the other side of this. Sooner or later, this bullshit in the Middle East will end. I know you don't think it will because the TV says it won't. MSNBC and CNN are, you know, foaming at the mouth like a dog. Fox is like, Fox News is like, we're in it for the long haul. But like every other cycle, it'll come to an end. There will be an eventual either explosion in equities, which I think we're past, or there's going to be a massive correction in equities. These are your stocks, your bonds, et cetera, right? You're going to have a drawdown. When you get drawdowns, what happens is the retail investor, the average everyday Joe and Jane, dumps all their, oh my God, I better sell it before it goes to zero, because the herd is stupid. That's why they're in the herd. And the people that manipulate and move markets and understand markets, when you're selling, they're buying. Now, if their money is tied up in silver, silver with a $20, $30, $40 basis, and silver's at $70, it's a ripe target for liquidation. So they start liquidating and start driving that price down. They get free and clear of it. They move that capital into the other suppressed investment. then you dump the silver, and then they move other reserve capital back into silver. And they slowly use that sideways moving thing like gold or silver until the next ramp up where they repeat the cycle again. So I would use an abundance of caution. I'm not saying if you buy a couple ounces a week or something at the local shop, stop doing that. I'm not saying that if you regularly invest in silver or something like that, not to do it. I'm saying, like, if you came into money and you're like, I got $5,000, man, before it gets eaten up with inflation, I'm going to buy silver. No, don't do that right now. Because taking a 20% bath is equivalent to a lot of years of inflation. And I think that's very, very conceivable right now with silver prices. All right. So now let's move on. Let's talk about AI a bit. And I want to come at this from a different standpoint today, because the whole idea that because you don't use AI and because you go make boomer rant posts on Facebook, even if you're not a boomer, that somehow you're going to stop this thing from growing is moronic. And what's even dumber is thinking the fact that I use it and talk about it is why it's popular, right? Like, I'm an evil person. It's my fault that AI is caught on the way that it has. This is an asinine thing. I could have died 5 years ago and AI would be exactly where it is today. Just many of you guys would know less about it. That's my little small contribution. My audience knows a lot about it, at least the ones that pay attention. You're not going to stop that. This is a new technology. The arguments you're making are the same arguments people made about the internet. They're going to track everybody everywhere. That's the same thing they said about the internet. And on one hand, they were right. On the other hand, they were wrong. The greatest tool of autonomy created in your lifetime, I promise you, in your lifetime, has been the internet. There is nothing that's created more autonomy than the internet for individuals around the world, not just the United States. The internet has made more people millionaires in China than anything else ever has. In China, where they have a social credit system that I'm obviously opposed to, okay? But still, it's still made more people millionaires than anything else in China ever did. The same arguments that you make about any of this shit were made about cell phones. When cell phones came out, oh my, when Blackberries came out, they're going to eat all your time. And like by the time people were done bitching about Blackberries, they weren't even a thing anymore. You're not going to stop any of the technology anyway. But the dumber argument is the electricity argument and the water argument. Let's talk about the water argument first. They're using all the water. If you look at water use in this country and say who uses the most water, agriculture uses 1,000 times more water than data centers do, first of all. We're going to stop growing crops because they use water? Some people actually would say yes. However, what does use water mean? What does it mean that they use water? What does that mean? If you give me $10 and I spend it, but then I pay you back, I used it, but I didn't consume it from your reserve, right? Because I returned it. So it's called the water cycle. And I'm not saying we can just take all the water we want from whatever we want with no consequences at all. But in the end, how does a data center use water? Older systems mostly use a form of evaporative cooling. And about 70% of the water that goes in is used in a standpoint that it doesn't go back out as warm wastewater and then return to the system. It goes up into the atmosphere. See, Jack, it's gone. Really? Because I learned in science class that when water fucking evaporates, it goes up in the sky, forms this shit called clouds, and then those clouds rain the fucking water back to Earth. That's my understanding. How much water evaporates from our oceans every day? And the person, you know, when you talk about, well, nature has a balanced cycle. Well, what does that mean? Has there ever been an area that was a beautiful tropical environment that turned into a desert that people didn't cause? Well, yeah, then shut up. There's no such thing as that. Nature isn't perfectly balanced and perfect overall just because man didn't touch it. Well, our entire claim here is predicated on what we decided is the way things should be for us. They'll talk about the environment and all, but most of the people talking about the environment, they couldn't tell you the difference between a lizard and a fucking snake if their life depended on it. Right? They don't know anything about nature. They live in cities. They drive the same cars you do while they complain about the cars you drive. They think that nature is going to the fucking park and playing frisbee with their dog. They don't know anything. So it's not about nature. It's about we want it our way for us. And that's why they attack the electrical usage as well. They'll tie the environment to it, but it comes down to your electric bill is high because of data centers. No, it's not. Your electric bill is high because of fucking inflation. Okay? That's reality. Everything you do online relies on a data center. It's not different just because it's AI. They're building more of them. Uh-huh. It's not different just because it's AI. Remember 5 years ago, mining Bitcoin was going to boil the ocean. Bitcoin used more energy than the entire country of Argentina. In another 10 years, Bitcoin was going to use all the electricity. What happened to that? Americans use more electricity with fucking Christmas lights, literally, than the entire Bitcoin global network. Do you know the main objection to email by people that wanted that disrupted and they wanted to stop? The people who were afraid that wanted to protect handwritten conventional mail in the post office? Email uses too much energy. Go look it up if you doubt me. It's the same dumb argument. It's the same dumb argument. Over and over, we make the same dumb arguments. But what is the real issue here? The real issue is we have poorly managed our natural resources like water, and we have poorly managed our capital allocation resources like fiat currency. And this has created a supply shortage in some places for some things that are based on natural resources. And it's created a runaway continuous inflation because of the way money is poorly managed and how everybody finances everything because they want it now and are willing to trade tomorrow for today. So there's your actual problem. What is the problem for the people in power with that problem? That leaves them holding the ball. That means we would all turn and we would all look and go, you did this, and I know it's you and your buddies that live up there in those grand palaces. This is your fault. You did this. Now, here's the thing about those clowns. They're actually pretty smart for clowns. And they don't care if you blame half of them. Both sides are content to let you blame the other side because they all benefit from it. It doesn't matter if you blame Republicans or Democrats. Both Republicans and Democrats stay in office and stay in bureaucratic seats for their entire fucking life as long as you blame one half and not both halves at the same time, right? And even if you had a supermajority blame one side and it swung the other way, it would just cycle back and rebalance. It's not like a politician's never switched parties before. Huh? Huh? Kind of like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Savage with the big handshake back in the 80s. Oh, brother, do you remember that? Okay, if you're old like me. It's the same political bullshit dog and pony show crap. It's never going to change. It's always going to be this way. This is the way that it is. And so you're not going to stop it, but all these arguments that lakes are drying up or we're using all the power, your bill's high, this is just so that you'll blame each other and pick one side of the people responsible to blame. You really have to understand that. The Democrats are fine with you blaming the Republicans. The Republicans are fine with you blaming the Republicans. The Democrats are fine with you blaming the Republicans, and the Democrats are fine with you blaming the Democrats, and the Republicans are fine with you blaming the Democrats. You get it yet? As long as you pick a side, they're happy. They're happy because they know there'll be this little bit of control that flows back and forth between the two mafia families, the two mafia tribes. But in the end, like, you know, if you go to a point where it's like a 60-40 thing, that means 40% of the assholes on one side still keep all their power. And they know it will come back to them, and it'll like a slinky back and forth anyway. And they're just using you. And when I see you folks say, well, our cornfields are brown because of that. No, they're not. I've seen people talk all this shit, and you look up where they live, and there's not a fucking data center within 500 miles of them. They're out of their minds because the TV, the internet, the TikTok channels et al. Have made them out of their mind. They can't think anymore. And it's because they're mad. It's because they're mad. And that brings me to my next point today. If people are so unhappy with the elected officials that they have, why won't they get rid of them? Why won't they get rid of them? I understand the first objection is going to be, well, Jack, you don't even vote. Okay, fine, whatever. No. I'm taking a different tact on this. Okay, go ahead. I'll hear you. Well, you don't even vote, but even you said, like, between Cackles and Orange Man, like, you would take Orange Man if you had to pick one of them. Yeah, you're correct. Okay. So but that's why they won't change them out, because you either have an Orange Man or a Cackles, and whichever one you want, the other one is so much worse, you'll stick with the one you have even though you don't like them. Have you heard of a thing called primaries? And I'm not talking about the president. The president is such a big office. It's so highly competitive from an economic gaming standpoint and from a popularity standpoint that it's really kind of like a third wheel in politics to even link all the other political situation to the presidency. We have a legislative election and we have a presidential election, and they're often quite divergent from each other. There's been plenty of times one party has taken the White House and the other side has kept the Senate and the House and actually grown seats in both. That's happened. So they're not in lockstep. I'm talking about everybody else. I'm talking about governors. Okay. I'm talking about lieutenant governors. I'm talking about federal Congress people, House and Senate both. And I'm talking about state level legislature, House and Senates, right? If people are so unhappy with who they have, why won't they make a change? Why won't they make a change? Because this is a bigger thing right now. Some people are sort of willing to make a change. The guy running for governor, I can't think of his name right now, the Republican in Colorado, is doing better than a Republican's done in polling leading up to a general election for governor in a very long time, and seems to have momentum. As people in Colorado look around and go, why are we doing all this stupid shit? We're not getting anywhere doing the stupid shit, and we keep doubling down on the stupid shit, and things haven't gotten any better. And the only defense the Democrats that run Colorado have, Donald Trump's fault! Let's talk about inside your borders of your square-ass state, Colorado. Let's talk about the things that have, like, let's compare you to another state that has the same president, the same federal government, and relatively the same amount of resources, but it's being run by the other group. And then let's look at, well, they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. In Los Angeles, that Spencer Pratt guy, who's like somebody nobody even gave a shit about not so long ago, actually has a shot at becoming as a Republican mayor of Los Angeles. I don't think it's going to happen. But there's people that are moving in that direction. Here's the reality. People will stick with their tribe until they are so miserable, and the fact that their tribe is in power when those things come together. It almost doesn't matter what direction it is either. People that are diehard Republicans, when the Republicans are completely in charge of everything and they're miserable, that's when they'll switch. That's when they'll cross party lines. And there's only a small segment of society that will do that. We call them the mushy middle. I estimate them to be about 20% of the population. But there's another significant portion of the voting population that may as well switch, the stay homes. And that's if the Republicans completely crater in the fall election, and right now I would tell you they're going to. It's going to be a massive takeover of the House and Senate by the Democrats in October or November of this year, somewhat mitigated by the re-gerrymandering of the gerrymandering that a lot of Republican states are doing right now in breakneck speed. But I still think that right now, if the election were held today, if Democrats take the House and either retake the Senate or almost retake it, because there's less elections every 2 years in the Senate. It's only a third that are up, and it's based on who has to defend their seats. And obviously a Republican can't lose a seat if he's not running or he's not in power. So this election a little bit favors Republicans on the Senate side, but still has potential to go like 51 seats Democrat. And if that election happened today, it's a very high probability it would, because people are miserable and they say, you got the House, you got the Senate, right? And you got the White House. Why aren't you doing the shit you said you would do? And Trump's not doing a lot of shit he said he would do. And he's doing a lot of shit he said he wouldn't do, like starting a new war. And despite all the loyalists, that chips away at that 20%. In the middle. But there's a lot of those people, they will not vote for a Democrat. You can't make them. I mean, they would almost vote Republican and get shot in the head if you had a gun and you said, you either vote Democrat or I'm going to shoot you. They would do it, but boy, it would be hard for them. They won't do that. But you know what they will do? they will not show up. They will stay home, especially in a non-presidential election year. And the party in power is already at a weak spot. But that this is the point of bringing it up. Like what I just told you, you should have known. The party in power in a midterm election, the party that holds the White House, inevitably almost always loses some seats in the Congress. Not always, but almost always. That's just the way it is because that side is less motivated. We've got the White House. We've got our orange man, right? And the other side's like, we're out of power. And so they're more motivated to go to the polls. And it doesn't matter when it's a Democrat incumbent or a Republican incumbent in the White House during a midterm. Happened to Obama, one of the most popular presidents of our time, it happened to. Whether you like him or not, the statement I made is factual. I didn't like him, but he was one of the most popular presidents of our time. Arguably the most popular president in the lives of most adults today was Bill Clinton, and it happened to him. He lost seats in the midterms, right? So you're already at that disadvantage because when people are upset, you don't want to be in power. That's part of rules for radicals, by the way. You don't want to hold power when everything's falling apart. You want to seize power after things have fallen apart, or you're going to get the blame, and it doesn't matter what side you're on. This is why, in spite of how much orange man rage there is, you still have like these weird aberrations where people in Colorado are willing to consider a Republican governor. People in Los Angeles are willing to consider getting rid of Karen Bass or whoever that other retard is with a Republican that most of them have never heard of. It's quite interesting to me. And he's making a very good case. I still don't think it's going to win. You want my prediction for LA mayor? Okay, you're in California, you have to get a majority. And so it's either going to be Bass or the other retard and Spencer Pratt in the runoff. And then whichever Democrat, whichever liberal gets past the first stage will win the eventual seat long term. That's what's going to happen there. All right. Last but not least, what comes next? 50-year mortgages, 10-year car payment plans. What else? I mean, the 50-year mortgage has been floated. It's been talked about. People have, you know, mentioned it. It's been kind of floated as an idea. I think they sort of kind of actually exist already. I don't know if they're government backed yet, but that's the move that Trump was making toward doing that. But I think this is what happens. When I say a 10-year car payment plan, you like, nah, 7 years, sure. Because we do have 84-month car loans now. And like normal, like, and I watched it go right to, it was always 5 years, and then some people would do four to save money on the interest on the financing. But the five-year car loan has been a gold standard for my entire adult life. And I remember when it went to 6 years, and I went, this is nuts. And it wasn't long after that that I had a family member that was going to buy a car. And I said, for the love of God, please trust me. This is what I do as far as analysis goes. Financial analysis is one of my superpowers. Bring me the data and let me look at different ways to purchase the car and give you options, and then you do whatever you want. Of course, they did none of that. They just went out and bought a new car. And when I looked at what they did, they financed the car for 7 years. And the payment was ridiculously high for what they bought. And they're still paying for it because it was that recently. 7 year car loan. So a 10-year car loan is not even that big of a leap from there. And a 50-year mortgage is not the leap that you think it is. Until the Great Depression, the model that mortgages were based on for most people was either 10 or 15 years. That was standard, 10 to 15 year mortgages. And then, of course, the Great Depression hit, whole country's upside down, economy's in a tailspin, don't know what to do. People are homeless. People can't buy houses. People were living out of vehicles. Sound familiar? You know the biggest growth that I'm seeing around me right now? Luxury RV camps. I mean, really nice ones. They're putting in concrete pads, you know, overhead protection, big, like really nice kind of like outdoor club environments, places to play games. They're putting them in on rivers and streams or with lakes and ponds, you know, outdoor barbecuing, you know, pavilions or bohios, depending on how you call them, covered areas. Really, really nice. From that level, like down the road from me, just a mile down the road, there's been 90 acres for sale forever, and they finally broke it into pieces, and the people bought the front part, turning that into a luxury RV area. Wells are very expensive to put in here. They put in a bunch of 2,500-gallon poly tanks, one to each pad, and they built little houses around them that look really good. That way they can keep them from freezing solid in the winter, and you only have to pump water to the tanks, and then it's like having a battery, for like running like distributed power to battery backup, except the battery happens to be water. So that's just like they don't have all the shit like the one down at the river does. But it looks like it's going to be pretty nice. And I bet you it's going to have like a pickleball court or who the hell knows what. And then my neighbor over to my west just put in five pads, put in, you know, some basic amenities, and just rents 55 and older. Because 55-year-olds in RVs don't throw parties and turn into redneck hellholes. That's just not what they are. And so that's like the biggest growth around here. Well, why is that? Because people can't afford to live in houses. People can't afford to live in houses. That's why. So if we look at the current situation, it's a different causal reason, but it's very similar to the mid-1930s. So what happened in 1930 with the housing market? The first 30-year mortgages were created and released, except it wasn't until 1948, and the government also stepped in at that point to help kind of like prevent this like variable interest rate, you're at the mercy of the bank type thing. The government came in and stabilized the lending market and created a 30-year mortgage. But they did it, that was done executively by Roosevelt. Then it went all the way until 1948 when Congress officially made law around the 30-year mortgage. And it wasn't until like 1952, I think, somewhere in the early 50s, that law was made applicable to buying an existing house. When they codified that mortgage in 48, it was only for new builds. It wasn't to go buy Bill's house down the road. It was seen as a way to spur housing development in the post. We're 3 years out of World War II. Baby boom is beginning. We need more housing. So that was the first thing. Let's get more housing. And then once we needed, like if you have more housing, some people are moving from one, you got to sell the other house. And then they made it applicable. But it wasn't even really until the 1960s. So it started in the mid-30s, and it was 25 years before it became kind of the de facto standard. And once it did, it locked in, and no one ever looked back. And most people, when they buy a house today, go straight to a 30-year mortgage. Even if they do some sort of creative structure like an 80-20 to avoid the insurance payments, right, or something like that, it doesn't matter what they do. It's usually based on a 30-year cycle. 15 and 10-year and 20-year mortgages are all available, but they're generally used in more commercial-type applications. I'm not saying nobody buys a house with a 15-year mortgage. I'm saying very few people do compared to the number that do 30. So it became a de facto standard in about 20 years. Things move slower at that time. Think about the situation. We're still locked into gold. Inflation still had some checks against it. Housing was still relatively very affordable. People could still earn enough income to buy a home with one salary. When did all that go away? 1971? Did that ring a bell? Yeah. So the 30-year mortgage came in just in the nick of time as we were losing control of inflation, because 1971, Richard Nixon didn't out of the clear blue sky come out and say, you know what, I think it'd be a good idea to get rid of the gold standard. No, he looked under the hood of the car that was not maintained for the last 30 years and said, well, shit, we're screwed. We need a new engine in the car. Let's get another one of these really great, fully aspirated, 454, like dual Holley four barrels on it. Let's put it, and we'll have any more. What do you mean? Oh, you just don't make them anymore. We got a slant six out of a Plymouth Ferrari. That's the best exchange between the gold back economy and a freaking fiat economy I can come with. You're swapping out a souped up supercar 454 big block for a slant six that came out of a Plymouth Valari and it ain't even been rebuilt. So at that point, that's the only engine you got. And if the car doesn't go down the road, we all die. You put the Valari motor in the Plymouth, into the car that now became basically a Valari, even though it still looks like a Mustang. Yeah. Right. Or I should say a Chevelle, right? Because the Mustang wouldn't have a 454. That's the story in a nutshell. And so if you don't think we can get there, you're wrong. We're going there. That is the, and 10-year car loans, especially now that we have these new EVs that have much longer duration battery life, and they do. I don't care how much boomer hate you've heard for Elon, the newer, and I say, I'm talking post-2022, the lifespan of those batteries is extremely, extremely extended but beyond what it used to be. And that's only going to get better. And so electric vehicles, love them or hate them, require less maintenance because they have less moving parts and less things to break. They're all computerized. So is everything else. Like, that's another example of, since you don't like the technology, you will find all fault with the technology and hold your technology that you love to no fault, right? That's nonsense. So with these newer vehicles, you're moving into a purchase of a car looking something that's more like a boat, not a house, but a boat. You know, you can easily get 20-year financing on a new boat. Did you know that? Do you know when I learned that? Well, my best friend at the time in the middle 1990s bought a boat with a 20-year freaking loan. And it wasn't like a cabin cruiser you could live on. That I might understand. No, it was like a really nice, what, 22-foot Bayliner or something like that. And he got a 20-year loan on a boat. I thought that was crazy then. 10-year loans on cars? I bet you we don't hit 2030 before that's a thing. And think about why it would be. Let me reframe it for you. In 1998, that sounds right, 1998, I bought the first house I ever purchased. I bought a two-story, three-bedroom, two-bath home of about 1,700 square feet in a conventional neighborhood. I know 1,700 square feet sounds really big, but it had big rooms in it. It wasn't like a high-end house. I don't want to misrepresent this, but it was a 3-2, two-story in a nice neighborhood in an up-and-coming area of Mansfield, Texas. I paid $84,250 for that house. $85,000. Just round up, call it $85,000. F-150s that are fully loaded cost $85,000 or more today. So what did I, when I bought that house, what kind of loan did I take out? A 30-year conventional mortgage. So if you would do a 30-year mortgage on an $85,000 house in 1998, why is it in any way out of bounds that a $70,000 vehicle would have a 10-year payment plan in 2026? There's an interesting little side thing off of that it might actually have a benefit. First of all, you know, when they say they don't make them like they used to when they're talking about cars, the answer to that is you're correct. They don't. They make them a hell of a lot better. Cars today break down less, have less catastrophic failures if properly maintained than cars 40 years ago did, period. You can have all the boomer rage you want about how great the cars were in the 70s and 60s. They were faster. And some of them, you go back to the 60s or the early 70s, they were a hell of a lot cooler. But from a standpoint of buying a sedan or a pickup truck, from dependability, they were not better. They were just easier for you to fix and cheaper for you to fix yourself. But they had more problems. However, a car today that's 10 years old, that's driven typically, you know, let's say 25,000 miles a year or even 20,000 miles a year, that's 200,000 miles. It's absolutely worthless at the end of that cycle. Car manufacturers, to make the financing work so they can sell the cars, may actually have to improve vehicle longevity just to be able to get the financing model to work. So it could have one benefit of it. We'll see. Anyway, with that, I want to see if I have any questions. I didn't really see a lot coming in today. Pretty lively chat at times, but I only see one or two questions. So let me, if you have a question for me from or a talking point for today's topics, now is the time. This is your last call. Put the word question or comment in all comments, or question or comment in your comment, and then make your question or your comment, and I'll come back after I hit these two, and I will take the last round, so to say, right? Last call round. So Sage Woodley says, cycle prediction, Jack. You must be talking about Bitcoin. So all I can tell you is, you must be talking about Bitcoin, you know, like I said, Bitcoin, right? Not silver. The typical time frame we would expect to see a cycle low, which we're in that year, that down year that Bitcoin usually has, is a long way off from a time standpoint. It would be about November. It would be about, you know, somewhere a few weeks shy of Thanksgiving this year, somewhere around the Survival Podcast Workshop for 2026. Somewhere around there would be the bottom. I'm not saying it's going to be the bottom, but that's where it would be past cycle. Looking at it historically, raw math, if the cycle holds exactly the way it's held, you're looking at going as low as 30 grand. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's what the base model says. Okay. However, we have things in place. You have an absolute fucking truckload of money that continues to flow into this space in the ETFs. Most of that money is not high velocity trading. It is long-term retirement, pension, etc. money. It is money. The reason it's buying the ETFs, it can't buy Bitcoin directly, which is what I always said. That money is very sticky. It tends to hang out, and it tends to be, you know, contributed weekly or monthly, whether it's a pension manager buying in weekly or an individual buying in every 2 weeks or something like that, or a monthly acquisition by some sort of a fund. That's the kind of money that is. And it's not that they won't diverge of it. It's that they do not dump it when the first signs of failure creep in, like the retail. The retail investor is the canary in the coal mine. The retail investor is the one that freaks out. The retail investor, when the retail investor starts buying like crazy, get out. When the retail investor is running for cover, wait just a little bit. Don't try to catch the falling knife, and then buy in. That's your accumulation trough, right? So in this cycle, I predict a muted retraction. You know, Bitcoin today could be 75,000. It could be 80,000. I really wouldn't know. I think people don't believe me when I say I don't like just sit around checking pricing all the time. I'm actually looking it up right now, though, because I couldn't tell you. 82. Okay, so it's up a little bit. Last time I checked, it was like 78. The 82 grand. All I can tell you is that there was a time not so long ago that I said, and people said I was an idiot, someday Bitcoin will crash from like 100,000 to 80,000, and people will tell you the sky is falling and it's all over. Here we sit at 80,000. There's no reason to believe it couldn't retract down to 60, though. None. I'm not saying that either. The answer is, I don't know. I know that we're not really going to know until we get into mid-late summer how this, because it's usually about August that you kind of get the feeling of where you're going to end up at the bottom. If we're sitting here in August, there's a very high probability that we don't go much lower. Or if we go lower, we go 10% lower. If we're going to really start to erode, it'll be August, September, you'll see the erosion begin. Like, I'm not saying it can't happen further, but if it doesn't happen by then, it's just not coming. And I think there just might be too much money poured into liquidity pools to acquire this asset now. Saylor is continuing to, he sold his Bitcoin. Yeah, he just bought $43 million worth this morning. Just for strategy, not for the other entities. $43 million this morning. That's not, and that doesn't, like, $43 million 15 years ago would have swayed, like $43 million would have spiked the freaking price overnight on one buy. Doesn't even move the needle anymore because the volatility is reduced. Companies like 21 Capital, they're quietly acquiring. And they have that business model ready to roll now. So I just don't see the full retraction. The other side of that is when we come back into the next upcycle, we're probably not 10Xing. You know, that would put us at like freaking 800,000. I don't know about that. I think next cycle you might be looking at like 300,000-400,000. I think that's much more reasonable. And it's just the asset maturing. Like, people want these days of like 1,200% annual returns to come back or something. Like, we just, like, an asset matures, and we told you then, and you didn't listen. That's all I can say. Your mother says, Doge proved that we can't cut insane waste and spending. Trump proved that we can't change insane foreign policy and domestic replacement. What is the logical outcome in a society that, and there it ends. So he must have been longer. But I think your mother's point was, I should say she, Doge proved we can't cut waste, and Trump proved that we can't change insane foreign policy. There's a lot of insane foreign policy that I don't know that I really saw Trump try to change. So I'm not sure. But let's just say that you're right. Let's say that there was some things Trump tried to do to change foreign policy. It was fought tooth and nail and was made far less effective than it would have been. What does it say? It says that we are in the end stages of an empire. That's what it says. You don't have to like that. I don't really care if you don't like it. It's what it said. And I'm not picking on the person asking the question. I'm saying for the people that would take exception when I say, first of all, people take exception when you say America's an empire. We are absolutely fundamentally an empire. There is no other nation that's ever existed that's had the kind of empire that we've had from a pure size standpoint. When we're able to project power into the South China Sea, okay, and we're also able to project power into South America, and we're able to project power into Europe and the Middle East all simultaneously, no country has ever been able to do such a thing before. And so there's different types of empires, different types of hegemonic empires. Some are the straight up conquer empires, and they have been the ones that fall on their ass the fastest, especially once it starts to unravel. Because it takes logistics, it takes money, it takes a lot of effort to maintain control over a geography of people that do not see themselves as one of you, and they don't want to be one of you, and you have to, by force, maintain control of that territory. That's very difficult. The most successful example ever, and it's why it's the best-known empire ever, was the Roman Empire. Because the Roman Empire was able to make a lot of what we would use as we would make vassal states today that were directly under empire control, make those people feel like they were Romans. Right? So it'd be like us taking over freaking Mexico, and then Mexico going, yeah, we're Americans now. Right? Not everybody, but enough that it helped maintain stasis. And that's why the beginning of the fall of the Roman Empire to the fall of the Roman Empire is about 300 years. You're sitting in a country that's only been here 250 years. It took 300 years for the empire to fully fall. Things will happen much faster in this day and age. Everything does. But we are not an empire that is about to fall. We are a falling empire. That's what your question leads to, right? We are a failing empire in real time. You are watching an empire fall. And a lot of us don't want to believe that. And this is part of it, too. As we have a global birth rate deficit, shouldn't we see a huge correction in real estate? Yeah, and more so in the United States, because as much as there is a global reduction in headcount happening, there's more of that happening in the United States. Right now, we would be in population free fall. To at least a degree where you'd be able to say that without immigration. That's part of why they're trying to prop it up so much. The other part is to dilute what it means to be an American so you can have more global government. But part of it, and some of the people going along with it are simply, and I'm including people in power, are buying into the country can't grow without immigration. My question is, do we need to? Is there anybody here that minus some of the civil rights things that still had not been fleshed out yet, if you can keep civil rights where they are today, or actually rein them back into something that makes sense, everybody's treated equal, and we could have 1955 of America right now. Keep all our technology, keep all, like, rights for all the stuff that's been gained in a positive way. We can keep all that, but we go back to the way America was in 1955 economically. Who wouldn't make that deal? Who wouldn't make that deal? I'd make that deal right now. Boom, I'm in. Right. How many people do we have in 1955? I think it was something like 1.8 million. Not one. I'm sorry, 180 million. Something in that range. If we could function then, why can't we function now with that number of people? Do we? Well, we have Social Security. We have a Ponzi scheme that needs new blood. That's the only answer. But should real estate correct? Well, maybe. Does everybody that needs a house have one right now? No. We'll see. I think it all depends which market you're looking at, what type of real estate you're looking at, et cetera. Right now, we have so many people that have demand for a home that can't afford one. I don't think you see a correction anytime soon. That doesn't mean, you know, when I say soon, I'm talking quarters, year, two, three, something like that. So there's going to be some other things that change a lot. Firebird Optics. Hey, Gordon says, glad I listened to you 5 years ago on Bitcoin. My cold storage wallet is happy now. This guy here, by the way, folks, this guy's making shit happen. This guy has built an incredible business in only a few years and has done 99% of it on his own back. I spent some time with him in Tennessee, going over some stuff with AI with him. He's an incredibly sharp dude. And, if you have an opportunity to network with Firebird Optics 3001, AKA Gordon, do so. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and, wrap up today. Usually I would tell you about an item of the day today. Today I'm going to tell you about a sort of item of the day. So I made a mistake this morning. Anybody that bought this, I apologize for my mistake. So my goal today was I was going to run the Astro E7 power bank. And when I went to pull it up in Amazon, that's made by a company called Anker, and I love Anker. It said currently unavailable. And I believe that the associated product I saw with it said, this product has been replaced with a new model. And I clicked on that. At least that's what I think I did. And if you look at this ad, it's not real clear, or not this ad, this listing on Amazon. It's not really clear. It says right there, this like offshoot Chinese brand, Rugvoda. But it's not really like heavily branded. And I just was in a hurry this morning and I thought this was a product from Anker. And when I saw the milliwatt hours on it and all, and all the specs on it, I was like, holy crap, what a great deal. I'm not even going to review it. I'm just going to say it's a good deal. You can buy it if you want to. I'll review it after it comes. And I immediately ordered one before I posted about it because it fooled me too. It is not made by Anker. It is made by this other company, but it is a 38,000 milliamp hour power bank with five outputs, two inputs, and the price is $23.34. And it even has a digital indicator of how much power you have. That said, I haven't reviewed it. I haven't tested it, and it's not made by Anker. So I made a decision. I took down all the social media posts about it. I will delete it from the Daily Mail so it doesn't go out there. I told everybody on Telegram, I'm sorry if you bought this. It was like 15 minutes after I posted it, somebody said, Jack, that's not Anker. And so if you bought it and you don't want it, you probably have plenty of time to cancel. $23. If it's half as good as it says, it's still a good deal. Anyway, when it comes in, I'll test it. I'll test its capacity. I'll plug it into various devices and see if it really will charge them five, six times, whatever the claims are. And after I have it in my hands for a while, if it checks out, I will not market it as Anker quality because it won't, it can't be, but I'll market it as a really good value because even at full price, it's $29. So if you want to get one of these anyway, if you're willing to take a $24 risk on it, because I am, it will be in today's show notes, but it's not on the website as a standalone post. If you go to today's show notes for episode 3843 and you look down where the sponsors of the day are, it will be the second bullet point under sponsors of the day, right under MSB and right before the case plays. So again, I'm sorry. today was the launch day for the new AI course. So I did a 40-minute video this morning after my morning ritual. I had things going on outside. I was at, like, got everything ready for the show, and I had a little bit of time, and I saw that. I'm like, man, I'm going to just throw that up as a deal of the day. Every once in a while, we all get one wrong, and I'm sorry I got one wrong. Anyway, with that, guys, I hope you enjoyed it today. I will be back tomorrow with another Just Jack show. And Wednesday, I'm going to have to reach out to the expert counsel this week. Wednesday will be expert counsel Q&A. Because to accommodate a guest, I have to do the interview show this week on Thursday. I had to flip-flop those days to make it work for this individual. And it was worth doing, so I did that. So you have a little bit of you get all the shows this week that you're supposed to get, just a little bit of a different arrangement of them. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.